Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's really wonderful to have you company for another episode of the show. You know, we started the podcast back in 2016 and we've recorded 450 episodes in that time, which I can't believe time's gone by so quickly. But when we started the podcast, the big idea was we wanted to think about what happens in other industries that dentists could learn from. I'm really of the view that the best ideas for any industry often come from outside of that industry, and dentistry is no exception. So as we've recorded 450 of these episodes, we've always looked to bring the best thinking, the best ideas, the best practices from other industries and bring them back to dentists so that you can adopt them for your own best purposes in your practice, so you can create the practice and the life that you ultimately want to create, the one that you love for yourself. And so I want to take a moment to thank every single person who's ever listened to the podcast. It's always a thrill to get the messages, and I really appreciate the kind words that get sent in to me. It really kind of gives me a bit of a spur to keep on moving along. So thank you to each of you who have tuned in over the last 8 years. Whether you're a regular listener or a sometimes listener, I really appreciate you. And I wanted to do something to demonstrate my appreciation, and I wanted to run some training about growing and scaling your practice, because one of the things that I know is practice management really, as time, you know, from times gone by, is pretty dead. The practice management techniques that were popular in the early 2000s no longer serve. I did all that stuff. I tried all that stuff and it just didn't work for me because I wanted to have a practice and a life. I didn't want to spend my whole life, you know, hanging off the end of my handpiece forever. I wanted to create an income, of course, but I wanted to create the time freedom to enjoy that and have the flexibility to work when I wanted and when I didn't want to work. I wanted to be able to do things with my family, go traveling, do all that sort of stuff. So for me, that really meant I had to run a true business. I wanted to move away from that self-employed situation of being a dentist, and I wanted to run a true business. So if you resonate with any of that and you want to create a life that you love as well as a practice that you love, you want to have a business that you run rather than a business that runs you, then I'm going to invite you to come along to our training session. All you need to do is head across to SavvyDentist.com/grow-scale, SavvyDentist.com/grow-scale, and you can join us for this workshop. It's going to go for about somewhere between 60, maybe 90 minutes or thereabouts, depending on how many questions we have. And I'm going to unpack with you the plan. And the plan is the culmination of, you know, 20 or 25 years worth of thinking and working about how to simplify everything. We're going to go through the essential elements that you need to create a business that you get to run rather than a business that runs you. Thinking about your own outcomes, whether that's a commercial outcome, your financial outcome, wealth outcome, time outcome, or anything in between, this plan is going to have you covered around that. So as my thank you to our listeners, please come and join us on that SavvyDentist.com/grow-scale, SavvyDentist.com/grow-scale, grow-scale, whatever you want to call it. I don't mind, but that's what it is. Please go ahead and register, and we'd love to see you there. But today on the podcast, what I really wanted to talk about is some tactical guides for building a great practice. Now, I guess this is a bit of a precursor to the workshop I'm going to be talking about in a way. But I think one of the things we want to be thinking about is what are the strategic, what are the tactical things that we need to do to create a practice and a life that we love. I wanted to share that some of the things I'm going to start with today might sound maybe a little bit soft, maybe even a little bit fluffy, but I am not a fluffy person. I'm not a soft, fuzzy, you know, feel-goody kind of person. I'm an analytical kind of person, and I'm really dedicated to results. So if you think this might sound fluffy or soft up front, please understand it's getting to a point where we're going to be driving real results as off the back of this. And as I mentioned a moment ago, I really believe that for practice owners today, we need to have more advanced thinking than we've ever needed in the past. Business is becoming more competitive. The marketplace is becoming more sophisticated. And therefore, the practice management techniques that, as I said, were prevalent in the early 2000s, even up to 2010 and beyond, they still exist today. But if you want to have a business that you love, that you get to run, then we need to jettison that old thinking and we need to embrace new thinking. So I wanted to share a few things with you today. Now, of course, what I'm going to share with you is predicated on the notion that you know what you want. And I think that's actually sounds really simple, but it's not as easy as you might think at the outset. And I want to just get clarity for you about what you're optimizing for. And I'll give you a couple of things to consider as you think about this. And this does require a bit of critical thinking. And I think it's also really important to understand that there is no one right answer. You have your own vision, you have your own dreams, you have your own aspirations, you have your own wants, you have your own likes and dislikes, and it's about creating a practice that you like, not one that you think you should create, but one that actually serves your needs from the very, very beginning. And so if you're thinking about this from a commercial point of view, you want to be thinking about, well, you know, financially, what's the income I want to be making for my practice? Because depending on the income that you want to take out of your practice, that's going to determine sometimes your business model, right? And similarly, you want to be thinking about how many days you want to be working clinically, how many days you want to be working in the business and on the business, I should say, and how many days you want to be actually out of the business. So you want to be getting that time component right as well. And again, that combination of money and time does dictate the kind of business model that you want to have, remembering there's no one right way to do anything. And of course, finally, you want to think about the things that give you joy, the things that make you happy, the things that you're optimizing your practice for from, you know, what do you like to do? Do you love clinical work? If you do, that's awesome. But if you don't, or you could do less of it, then we need to take that into account too. What are the things that you love? What are the things that you don't love? And while you're thinking about this, you know, I'm 52 at the moment as I'm recording this. And, you know, one of the things I like to think about is, what does my life look like when I'm 55, when I'm 60, 65, 70 and beyond? And trying to get a bit of an idea of what's a day in the life look like for me. You know, how do I want to spend my time? Who do I want to spend it with? What does that look like on a day-to-day basis? So I can picture in my mind's eye actually what I'm trying to create. If you haven't done that bit of work yet, just pause the podcast now and do a little bit of thinking around that, because I think that's kind of the first domino that needs to be knocked over, is that clarity piece about what you want to get done in your life as a result of running your business. And I guess one of the second caveats I want to put out there is to understand that business growth is a function of personal growth. And I just want to say that again, because I think it's really, really important. And that is, business growth is a function of personal growth. In other words, for the business to grow, first, we must grow. And that means that we can't operate our business at a higher level if we're not prepared ourselves to grow to a higher level. And that could mean developing new skills, better mindsets, all those sorts of things that really going to propel your business forward. So if you're not where you need to be from a business point of view, the first bit of work is often internal. Okay. And so with that in mind, I'm going to start with the first of the three keys I want to talk about today, the three key ideas. The first one is really around mindset. And as I said, if we want to grow the business, we've got to grow ourselves. So a couple of key things around mindset. We could probably, we could spend 3 days talking about mindset and getting the right psychology. But let me give you a couple of things to think about as you go through this. The first thing is the absolute importance of being positive. And I don't mean positive to the point of being naive or positive to the point of being deluded. I mean positive in seeing the best in every situation. Positive in terms of not dwelling on the negative. Positive in seeing possibility rather than impossibility. And one of the problems that I have with social media in particular is that that can be a real forum for negativity. I was on two of the Facebook groups the other day, and I noticed that someone was having a tough time. And I get that that's the reality for everyone in business. We all go through tough times, right? But the vibe around it was, oh yeah, it was a bit cynical, it was a bit negative, it was a bit sarcastic. And I know as Australians and maybe even our Kiwi friends as well, but particularly Australians, we can be a bit sarcastic and we can be a bit of glasses half empty. And while I understand the desire to empathize and to say you're not alone, and I get all that, what I think is more important is to be around people who actually support you and who might challenge you. They might challenge your story. They might challenge your version of reality in a nice way. They're not going to, you know, call you a doofus or anything like that, but they're going to challenge you. They're going to hold you to a higher standard. They're going to hold your feet to the fire. So it's very important to choose the right environment to hang around in. And certainly in the coaching group that we run, we talk about the culture of being daring and what that means for us. And I'd encourage you to make sure that you're surrounding yourself with a group of high performance, positive people who are going to support you, but also challenge you and not buy into your BS, basically. And great to be empathetic, great to be, you know, kind of go, I get it, I've been there too. And here's the way forward. Here's what we've got to do to fix this rather than kind of getting into the negativity and the pity party. So please surround yourself with really positive people. Keep off social media as much as you need to do that. And it's really about seeing the world as an abundant resource rather than a scarce resource. So the second thing around mindset is really to understand this model of be, do, have. And I've spoken about this before. This is basically saying that the personal growth is the leading indicator of the business growth, right? So most people think about what they want to have and then they think about what they have to do, but they forget about the who do I need to be? What's the type of person that creates this kind of, you know, wealth or this kind of business or this kind of outcome? And I think this is really, really important to understand a little bit about identity as well. And I'm fond of saying that all progress begins with the death of an identity. And I don't mean that to sound really macabre or to be gruesome or anything like that. I'm not talking about the physical death of anything. But what I am saying is that if we identify primarily as a dentist, as a clinician, but we want to have a business that operates as a business rather than one where we're self-employed, we're going to need to shift our identity because we will always, always, always act in congruence with our identity, right? And we don't like to be out of sync with that. So to change our identity is not necessarily an easy thing to do. We've got to start thinking about how we see ourselves. And the way to change our identity is through affirmations or incantations, I am statements. I am a business leader. I run a successful business. Rather than I am a dentist, it's about changing how we see ourselves. Who we see in the mirror is really important when it comes to identity. So if you want to grow your practice, if you want to have a business that's really scalable, and I know some people listening to this want to have one large practice, some people might want to have multiple practices, and we've got clients to do all of that and more, but it's really important to understand the identity shift that needs to occur before you see those outcomes. And to shift your identity, we need to shift from being a dentist to a business owner and even to being an entrepreneur around that as well. So again, really, really important. So we talk about three stages of growth of a practice. You know, certainly, you know, you've got your startup phase, which I'm not necessarily referring to here, but the first stage is around growth when you're looking to, you know, really hone that profitability, get the cash flow sorted out and so on. And of course, the next level is really about scaling up, where you're looking to create leverage through systems and team and so on. And the big level is around creating enterprise value, you know, where you might think about exiting, right? And so at each stage of that journey, it requires a focus on different things and it requires an upgrade of identity at each stage. And so to try and solve the problem that you're faced with, the thinking that got you there in the first place, I think it was Einstein that said that, or his creditors saying that, just doesn't work. Okay, so that's a bit about identity. And while we're talking about knowing ourselves, it's really important to understand our own strengths, our own weaknesses, our own blind spots. And so there's lots of ways that you can do this. Now, I'm a big fan of 360-degree reporting. I think that's a really useful tool. There's lots of tools out there that you can have a 360-degree report. But the whole idea of a 360-degree report is to understand how you feel or think about yourself, how you experience yourself, but also how others might experience you as well. Because we might think that we're behaving in a particular way and people are experiencing us one way, but that might be accurate in part, but there's likely to be some blind spots there. And a 360-degree review will highlight those blind spots and will highlight areas of growth. Now, as I said, lots of different tools you can use around that. I use a particular tool that I did some training on to become accredited to use. It's called the Human Synergistic Circumplex. And it's a very useful tool. But as I said, there's lots of other ones out there. More simplistically, you could do a DISC analysis and you could look at how you show up in that type of profiling. I mean, my particular profile in DISC is a DC, which means I'm more task-focused than people-focused. And so that's why I say when we're talking about all this fluffy stuff, you know, I'm thinking about it in the context of how do we get results, because I'm all about how do we get those outcomes. And another thing you might want to think about when it comes to mindset is sometimes we think about all the things we need to do and all the things we need to be, but sometimes the biggest help or the biggest progress can be made by just taking off the handbrake. You know, what are the things that are slowing us down? What do I need to stop doing? What do I need to stop being? And all those sorts of things are really useful to consider when you're looking to grow yourself so that you can then grow the business. So that's key number one. The key number two that I want to talk about is about course correction. And sometimes when people are off the path, they don't quite know how to get back on the path, and they can just get lost and meander and lose time, lose energy, lose focus. And it's sometimes hard to recapture that vision, that direction, that drive. So yesterday I was playing tennis, and I have a tennis lesson a couple of times a week, and my tennis coach, Craig, really nice guy. Anyway, I got onto the court and we were just hitting some balls, warming up, and my forehand was terrible. I mean, it was terrible. It was going long. It was skying. I was framing a couple of them, and it was just really out of kilter. And, you know, I was getting frustrated. And the more frustrated I got, actually the worse it got, I should say. Tennis is one of those games. It's probably a bit like golf. When you're frustrated, things don't go so well. Anyway, so the coach, Craig, called me to the other end of the court, and he basically said to me, okay, Jesse, let's unpack this forehand. So literally I was standing on the baseline next to him, and we're going through every individual part of the forehand stroke, and, you know, whether it was the racket back, the turn, you know, stepping towards the ball, you know, moving through the ball, the weight transition, all that sort of stuff. And so we broke it down into these individual components, and he said to me, righto, what I want you to do is I want you to think of one of these components, and through a process of, you know, elimination, we're going to get this forehand back on track. And so anyway, I went down the other end and I started thinking about my backswing, and that wasn't the issue. That was okay. Or I was thinking about my weight movement through the ball, and that wasn't too bad. The problem was actually my footwork. My feet weren't quite in the right position. But it took me a little bit of time to go back and focus on those fundamentals, because it's the fundamentals that drive success. And one of the things that I think is really, really important to understand in any business, there are a couple of fundamentals that produce most of the outcomes. And so again, really important to understand that mastery, I can't remember who said this, but mastery is about doing the basic things brilliantly. Now, doing those fundamental things consistently and well, and I would say the word consistent in there is a key component of that. If you can do the basic things to a high standard consistently over time, you're going to be fine, right? You're going to be fine. But it's about identifying those things that move the needle. And with that in mind, I want to share with you a bit of a flow chart, or in your mind, think of it as a flow chart. So as the business owner, you and your leadership team, whether it's your practice manager or maybe it's just you, whatever it is, but you as the leader or the manager of the business are going to make certain decisions, right? That's what your role is. And those decisions are going to lead to certain actions and activities. And those actions and activities will lead to results, right? And now we capture those results with metrics. Sometimes those results are called key performance indicators, but at the end of the day, we're looking at the results. Now, the big issue here is if we're getting the results that we're seeking, we are obviously doing something well, right? The problem that I see a lot of dentists and practice owners do is they don't know which of the activities are giving them the good results. They haven't really thought about, is it the backswing? Is it the footwork? Is it the turn? Is it the weight transition? What are the things in the business that create the good result for you? And so, equally, if things are not going well, what are the things that we've stopped doing or never did in the first place? What are the actions or activities that are missing? If you think about accounting is the process of capturing our business activities into some financial statements, whether it's a P&L, a cash flow statement, balance sheet, and whatnot. That is how we capture the results of our business activities. But if we want to think about it, business analysis is thinking about the results and reverse engineering the activities that drive those results. Now, in any business, doesn't matter whether it's a dental practice, doesn't matter whether it's Coles, Woolies, or anything in between, there's really kind of three categories of activity, and those activities are marketing, sales, and delivery. Now, if you're in, you know, a Woolies, you've obviously got to market your goods to sell. You've got to have, you know, some sort of sales process, and then you've got to be able to deliver on the promise, right? Same in a service-based business, and definitely the same in dentistry as well. Now, in dentistry, we use the word case presentation in lieu of sales, but let's just use business language. It's sales, right? Because if we're going to grow our business, we need to master marketing, we need to master sales, and we need to be able to deliver high-quality dentistry consistently and well to our patients so they have a great clinical experience and they have a great customer experience. And that's kind of key and fundamental. So what we've got to do is identify which activities in those three categories move the needle the most. And it's like anything, you know, the Pareto principle applies here, and that is, you know, 80% of our results are achieved by about 20% of our activities. So the key thing is to identify what are those 20% of the activities that we do that produce the majority of the result. And those vital few activities we call critical drivers. And the big idea is we've got to measure the activity output of our practice. So let me just say that again. Most people will measure the results after the fact, but very, very few people will measure the activities that drive those results. So in our practice, some years ago, because I don't work in the practice anymore, I own the practice, but I get reports and I'm not in it on a day-to-day basis, I get a dashboard. And the dashboard has two components to it. It's a weekly dashboard, and I get this week's results in terms of KPIs, the outcomes, you know, whether it's the financial outcomes, you know, the type of work that we did, all those sorts of things, the number of new patients, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? All that sort of jazz. But we also record the activities for the week, you know, in the categories of marketing, sales, and delivery. And I know that if I've got the results this week, then a few weeks ago, we're obviously doing the right activities because the activities are a leading indicator and the results are a lagging indicator. So if I'm getting the right financial outcomes or the right new patient flow or whatever it is, then the activities we did prior to that were obviously the right activities. If we've not got the right results, then obviously a couple of weeks ago, I've somehow deviated from the activities that we needed to do. Now, equally on the dashboard is this week's activity. So I know if my activities this week have been great, then I've set up the next, you know, couple of weeks okay. But if the activities have slipped this week, then I'm going to see that reflected in our results in a little while, you know, in a week or two or three after the fact. So we've got to really measure those leading indicators, those activities as well. So if you get off track, we've got to go back to those leading indicators and go, what went wrong? Like my forehand, what went wrong? The leading indicators in the forehand, the backswing, the turn, the step into the ball, the weight transition, all that sort of stuff are the activities that make a good forehand. So in our practice, what are the activities, and they're categorized as marketing, sales, and delivery, what are the activities that drive your practice forward? We've got to first identify them, and then we've got to measure them on a consistent basis, knowing that if we do them consistently and well, we're going to stay on track. But if we do get off track, we've got something to go back and reference, something to go back and check. So again, course correction is really, really important. Okay, so that's the second big idea that I wanted to share with you today. Okay, so the third big idea that I wanted to share with you today is about creating an aligned team. And when we talk about teams, you know, with business owners, whether they be dentists or otherwise, a common frustration is people dealing with team members. And whether it's hiring people, managing people, you know, getting the right performance out of people, all of those sorts of things are common frustrations for business owners. And in fact, when I do log on to the Facebook groups, you know, it's very common to see people getting frustrated around managing teams. And as I said, if you can get this right in your practice, if you can learn how to build and lead a high-performance team, it is going to be an absolute accelerator for your practice. It's going to be a force multiplier because you're going to have everyone rowing in the same direction. You're going to have everyone aligned towards a common goal. You're going to have everyone knowing what their role is to achieve that goal. And that is what creates energy. Now, here's the thing about A players. A players don't always get the opportunity to play with other A players. And so they often tolerate B players, C players, D players, but particularly C and D players bring the team down. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But if you can build a team of A players, they're going to love working with each other. They're going to feed off that energy. And you can feel it. You can, when you've got a great team, you can feel that energy. I don't know if you've ever had it in sports or business or anything else, but you can feel that vibe. You can feel the energy. And there's something that's hard to put your finger on, but it's definitely there. When I was younger, I used to be involved in rowing, and literally we had everyone rowing in the right direction there, but you could even feel when that crew was in unison, because if the timing was a little bit out, the balance of the boat was a little bit out, but our boat, when it was in balance, it developed this little air whistle. I don't quite know why it did that. Maybe this is the way the boat was built, but you could feel it. But the moment you kind of spoke about it, you'd kind of lose it. It's like that flow state that everyone talks about. And so when you build a team of A players, you will experience flow. So let's talk about how to think about building an aligned team. Well, there's kind of three elements around this. The first one rests with you, the practice owner, and really your role for the team is to create clarity. And that means being really clear about your vision, your goals, and the purpose of the practice. So what that means is you need to spend the time thinking about that, articulating that in your own mind, and then obviously communicating that. Okay, you've got to be able to share that so people know what they're doing, why they're doing it, what's the context in which they're operating. Many years ago, I worked as an associate dentist, and it was at a large group practice, and I was the only associate dentist there. There was quite a number of business owners in the practice, and I remember saying to them, you know, what's the big vision here? What are we trying to do? And no one had really sat down and created this alignment amongst the business owners. So the team, while they're doing their best work on a day-to-day basis, they're trying their hardest, they didn't quite know what it was gearing up for. They didn't know where to point their boat, so to speak. You know, where are we aiming for? What are we trying to do? So your big responsibility as the practice owner is to be clear about your vision, to be very clear about your goals, to understand the purpose of what you're doing in your own mind, and then to communicate that over and over and over to the team, with the big outcome being to enroll the team, to get them on board with that, to have them be enthusiastic about that, to help them understand that. And to do that, you're going to have to share with them what's in it for them. Why would they care? It's not about just helping you achieve your business goals. What's in it for them? How do we enroll them with that? So I use a particular framework in you know, the work that I do with our clients called the Engage Hearts and Minds. And we want people to give us their discretionary effort. We've got to engage their hearts as well as their minds. They're not just there to give us their labor. We want to get their discretionary effort, but to do that, they've got to care, and we've got to care about them for them to care about us. So we've got to show what's in it for them. So the second part of creating an aligned team is really about creating a compelling team culture. And this is, you know, something that people talk about, but it's actually something that is usually done by default rather than by design. And it's a real shame, because every practice has a culture, and if we'd just taken the time to, you know, create it by design, you'll find that you get a much more productive team. You'll find that you get a much more aligned team. So there's really kind of five elements that go into creating culture, and I created a model some years ago called the Culture Creation Telescope. It's a series of lenses, and the first lens is really about understanding the core values. And the core values of your practice should be a very close reflection of your own core values, of course. And when I talk to people about their core values, they kind of have these posters up on a wall that, you know, gather dust, and no one really kind of sees them. And after a while, they become almost invisible. And I want to kind of shy away from that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about core values that are embedded, core values that drive the business, that kind of inform the decision-making of the business. And you know, some months ago, I had the opportunity to travel to the United States with our boardroom members, and we went, again, thinking about the best ideas coming from outside of the industry, we went across to see three world-class businesses. The first was Disney over in California. The second was the Pike Place Fish Markets in Seattle. And finally, we went to Las Vegas to visit Zappos. Now, Zappos is a business that some of you would have heard of, but it was, you know, it was made famous by Tony Hsieh, and he really left his first business after being bought because the culture deteriorated so badly. So when he got to Zappos, it was all about making sure the culture came alive. And if you go to Zappos, you can see that every single person lives and breathes that culture. It is part of their DNA, and that's the kind of, you know, culture embedment that I'm really kind of talking about, the culture embodiment I'm trying to talk about there. And so if you think about this, and you might think, oh, this is, just sounds really fluffy. Well, here's a quote from Levi Strauss, the jeans company. They believe that businesses that are values-driven are not just more profitable, but they're more enjoyable for those people within it. And when people are enjoying their work, you get that discretionary effort. So again, we're talking about results here. Values-driven businesses are more profitable, and they give you the better commercial outcome, but they're also more enjoyable workplaces for your team, which means less team turnover, less changes in productivity, you know, ups and downs of productivity associated with staff turnover, less staffing headaches, all that sort of stuff is really, really important. So the first part of the Culture Creation Telescope is values. The second part really is about getting clarity of the vision, which I've touched on already. And the third part really is around stories that connect. And I learned about this by examining the All Blacks rugby team, which many of you know is the most successful sporting team team going around. And as an Australian, that sticks in my craw a little bit. But the Kiwis, I've got to hand it to them. The All Blacks are an amazing, amazing football team. But they weren't always an amazing football team. In the early 90s, they were going through a bit of a crisis. Their culture was terrible and losing games left, right and centre. The behaviour of the players at that time was pretty ordinary. And they did a huge reset and culture became front and centre of the All Blacks' way of doing things. And the All Blacks really have a view that they want to leave the jersey better than they found it. So to do that, they've got to be a better person. They've got to grow as an individual. But they also needed to unite all these different cultures because, like many countries, New Zealand is a multicultural country. It's got lots of different ethnicities and the All Blacks are representative of all those different ethnicities. So you've got the Maoris, you've got Polynesian culture, you've got Caucasian culture and everything else in between. And so they use stories to create connection amongst their players and amongst their fan base. And they use stories to understand, how each of them feel. And I think this is really important. When it comes to stories, again, when we went to the United States, I said we went to Disney, and that's what we really took away from Disney, is stories for work. And creating those stories from a work perspective is really important. The origin story that you want to have, the individual stories around cases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those stories create culture. And the fourth and the fifth lenses of the Culture Creation Telescope really are around habits and behaviors. What are the things that you want to see people doing on a day-to-day basis that would support the value that you've articulated? What are the behaviors that would underpin that value of excellence or whatever it might be? And equally, it allows you to identify those values that would erode that value. What are the behaviors you don't want to see or the habits you don't want to see? So I think it's really, really important when you're thinking about creating a compelling team culture, you've got those five elements there. Then, of course, we've got to look at the individuals. Now, many of you would have heard the expression of having the right people on the bus, and that's a great expression from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. And the tool that I like to use to assess our team around that is called the Performance Culture Matrix. It's a 2x2 grid. On the vertical axis, you've got performance. On the horizontal axis, you've got culture fit. And an A player is someone who is in the top right quadrant, and they are a great performer in their role. They do everything right. They're performing at a high level consistently. And they're a great culture fit, which means they share our values, they buy into the vision, they have the right habits and behaviors on a day-to-day basis that support those values and so on, right? And that's an A player. And we want to ultimately build a team of A players. Now, we also have B players who are great culture fits, but they are not quite proficient in their role, or they're not consistently proficient in their role. And that comes down to training, right? That means we've got to have a way of training people so we can upskill them and up-level them. And that means that if we can have that inbuilt into our practice and have those systems inbuilt, A, that creates enormous value in the practice, but B, it allows you to get your players from B to A as quickly as possible. It means that you have a way of turning your B players into A players consistently and well, and that's really important. I think every business needs to see themselves as a training institution to some degree. So again, how well you can train your players, again, really, really important. Now, on the left-hand side of the performance culture matrix, you've got your C and D players, and these are the ones that are not culture fits. So a C player is someone who is not a culture fit, but who performs pretty well in their role. And really, honestly, these are the hardest ones to deal with, in my experience anyway. And what's really difficult here is these people don't fit the values, they don't buy into the vision, their behavior and habits and all that sort of stuff don't support what we're trying to achieve. But in terms of technical proficiency, they can be quite good. And so what happens as business owners, we are often scared to let them go. So we tolerate things from them. And remember, you get what you tolerate. We tolerate things from them that we don't really want to tolerate because we're scared that if they leave, we're going to have this yawning gap in our skill set. And so what ends up happening is our culture gets eroded, okay? One bad apple, as I say, can spoil the barrel, right? And so we've got to make sure that we address this. Now, I used to be really optimistic that we could take a C player and have them become an A player by getting them on board with the culture. And sometimes that works, but my experience is that more often than not, the C player has their performance slip and they become a D player. And with a D player who's neither a great fit in terms of culture and not a great performer, well, clearly they need to go and find a role that's better suited to them. Now, what's really important to understand here is whether people are an A, B, C or a D player does not indicate whether they're good people or not. It's all about fit for our business, okay? They might be an A player in someone else's business, but a D player in our business. It doesn't make them a bad person. It's all about fit. So when it comes to creating this aligned team, as I said, we've got to really look at your role as the practice owner, articulating the vision, the goals, and you know, communicating that and making sure we enroll people into that vision and the goals there. From the team point of view, we've got to create the compelling culture. We've got to go through those five elements of the culture creation telescope. And then from the individual point of view, we want to make sure that we're assessing our team and finding out whether they're A's or B's or C's or D's and taking the appropriate steps from there. Please don't feel like you have to tolerate poor behavior or poor values or poor culture fit just because of a skill set. I'm really a believer that there are great people out there looking for a good role to move to. There's a lot of movement in the recruitment market at the moment. And my belief is, and my experience is that, you know, good people want to work with other good people. You've just got to kind of figure out how to recruit them into your practice and keep them in your practice. And again, that's a conversation for another day perhaps, but that's another skill you want to develop in your business. So over the course of this, you know, conversation today, I wanted to share with you three key things. The first was around mindset, making sure that we understand that for the business to grow first, we must grow. And we've got to adopt the right mindset around that. The second key thing was understanding that we all get off course sometimes, like I did with my tennis, but we've got to find a way to get back on course. And to do that, we've got to look at the activities that we know produce results and really dial into those critical few activities, those critical drivers that you know allow us to get back on course and measure those activities on a day-to-day basis. And the third key thing I wanted to share with you was around some ideas and some thoughts for creating that aligned team. There's three big ideas about what you're doing as the practice owner, creating that culture, and then, of course, assessing the fit of the team members according to the performance culture matrix there. So again, I hope you find that really helpful. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program today, if you want to join us for this training about how to grow and scale your practice, it's going to be about 60 to 90 minutes and it's totally free. There's no cost. Head across to savvydentist.com /grow-scale. You're going to have the opportunity to ask questions and it's my way of saying thank you for listening to the podcast. And I hope you've enjoyed this episode and I look forward to seeing you on the next one. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.